If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Shankar Patel and CFO Chris Day of Lords Group Trading, a specialist builders, merchants, and heating plumbing distributor. So welcome, gents.
Morning. Thank you.
Yeah, well, big congrats on today's better-than-expected year-end trading update. But before we sort of dig into the details, Shankar, I don't suppose you could give us a quick sort of bird's-eye view of what's happening at the coalface in terms of all things building materials related.
So, look, I mean, 2022 worked out to be a decent year for us in particular. Market certainly was starting to show signs of tailing off in Q4, which is largely expected, you know, following unprecedented price increases, high levels of inflation, and consumer squeeze. But January is a bit too early to determine whether that is going to lead to a downturn of any severity. We're all expecting that demand is going to be softer than it might have been over the last 24 months. But at the same time, the resilience is also being indicated in the demand. We're not seeing a dramatic decline in any of our businesses or any of our branches. And in fact, there are pockets of demand that still exist where people have either been able to mitigate any of the financial implications or costs and effects of what's been happening over the last 12 months in terms of inflation and a squeeze on incomes. We're also seeing that commercial demand from people who are in the commercial space building, that is not showing a material decline. House building, we're yet to see the full effect, but it's widely known that that's obviously going to take a downturn. And for how long is really the key question for us. So there's reasons to be positive heading into 2023, as far as we're concerned, and in particular for us, we're, as we keep on reiterating, we're a very small part of a very large market, and and our business is always focused on gaining market share. So I hope that sort of gives you a flavour. We're not seeing a calamity in the market as yet.
Yeah, and you've got that 80% sort of like exposure to repair, maintenance, improvements, haven't you, as well there, Shankar, in terms of there's a lot of houses, particularly where I live, that need to be improved in terms of the decarbonisation and energy efficiency, but also just generally sort of upkept and lifted, sort of upgraded.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you've got the longer-term case for construction materials and construction in the UK. You know, the buildings, not only new buildings that need to be built for a variety of reasons, but old buildings that need to be upgraded. And there are just so many of them across the country. And that really underpins the market in which we're in. It's certainly the plumbing and heating side. We were in that market because we see resilient demand. You can have all sorts of crises, but if your heating is not working at home, you're going to do something about it one way or the other. We've got a stable market there. We've then got evolving technologies in new products, which we're constantly making sure that we're part of that distribution chain. We're looking at for the products that are, you know, replacing old technology or are being pushed along by government policy or even consumer demand trends, etc. So as a distributor, we're well placed as demand changes from X particular product to Y. We're very well placed because of our network of depots and our capability in sales and stock holding to be able to meet the demands as the demand for different products comes through. And I think that underpins our business. You know, it's a resilient business focused on repeat customer and a repeat demand from our customers.
Mm, good. And then, Chris, just turned into sort of like the, you know, input cost inflation, which was a major issue sort of like 12, 18 months ago. And also we had the boiler supply issue from a lot of the sort of the components into the major OEMs. How's that sort of like viewing as we head into 2023?
So I think it's different between our two divisions. So we kind of talk about this all the time. I think in P&H there's less pressure. So it does exist, but it's relatively typical. The components are largely imported, but a relatively small cost of the overall.
And is the boiler issue in the P&H? Is the boiler issue in the P&H sort of alleviated, easing up?
Yeah, it is, and I think you can see that through the like for like. So, you know, half year it was negative 9.1 on a like for like, but kind of full year 1.6. So, absolutely alleviating, not gone, but we're about to kind of mature on the full year anniversary of that problem.
Good. And what about sort of the input price inflation then, in terms of just building materials? Because obviously, a lot of the manufacturers of that building have been pushing up their prices.
Yeah, so if you take the merchanting like for like, so full year 17.4%, it's around about a third of that number, just a little bit over a third of that number that is product price inflation led, and I think it existed in 21. It's continued in 22. It's probably been more concentrated in energy intensive products in 22. I think we are starting to definitely see that plateau into 23.
Good. And then Shankar, in terms of sort of the H1, H2 split, I did notice on your like for likes, you've accelerated from H1, which I think like for like overall was sort of like negative about 3%, and then you were flat for the full year like for like, but that means obviously H2, just by sort of like doing a bit of maths, looks as though it was sort of 6%, 5 or 6% higher in that second half. So you've obviously had a good end to the year. What's been sort of driving that sort of like good outturn for 2022?
So merchanting in particular has done very well, and again, you know, it's still the same consistent strategy that's been executed, and that is gaining market share by having a superior or a better customer proposition. You know, whilst I know it's difficult for many to really get a grip on how can a business accelerate above market in its like for like, but you know, good old fashioned knowing your customer and serving them incredibly well is something that we do. You know, we do consistently well all the time. And what we've seen certainly last year is with high inflation, you know, a lot of operational challenges right across the board. You know, everybody's had lots of people challenges and also shortage of product. Our ability to serve our customers is what's really resulting in our like-for-likes being very, very strong in H2, certainly in the merchanting sphere. And you know, that is a constant theme that we've mentioned right from the word get-go when we IPO'd the business, that it's a business that focuses very much on operational excellence, which effectively allows you to serve your customer better. And if you serve your customer better, you know, in a large market, there is always a customer who's willing to deal with you over your competitor. And it's not necessarily just because you're cheaper. And in our case, you know, that's not our strategy to be cheaper, but we are very good at making sure that our customer is served extremely well. And that's the reward that we get. In addition, we are constantly investing in our business. You'll see we're always talking about our three P's, our investment in our people, our plant, and our premises. Again, that allows us, you know, so many more efficient ways of dealing with our customer when you're constantly investing in your people, making sure they're highly motivated, which, you know, generally results in them providing a far better service to our customers, making sure our plant and our premises are up to date, you know, well invested, so that the customer experience is as good as it could possibly be. Of course, it can always be better. And again, you know, in 2023, we'll be pushing further along on our investments in our three P's. And it's literally that which allows us to produce, you know, really strong figures, is that focus on the customer and focus on the colleague.
Mm. And that sort of, like, you know, excellent customer service and entrepreneurial spirit, obviously at the, you know, sort of the depot level, the face-to-face level, you're complementing that with your e-commerce strategy as well. And can you talk a bit through how that's developing alongside the sort of the Mr. Central Heating sort of long-term opportunity?
Django. Yeah, Chris, do you want to?
Oh, sorry, Chris.
That one? I think Chris is more involved in that. Go on, sorry.
Yeah. So I think the overall digital strategy for us, we see it as another really good method of capturing a customer. So we're not precious whether they transact completely through digital or whether they kind of spread offline and online. We see it as just another great customer acquisition channel, and that's what it's proving to be. Specifically on Miss Central Heating, it is very strong online. So about 25% of its revenue originates online and will trade through the stores as well. We opened the 10th branch of Miss Central Heating in West Brom in 2022. And at the half year results, we set the ambition of 50 sites over the medium to long term. I think what we like about Miss Central Heating is it kind of ticks a number of boxes. It's EBITDA margin accretive. It delivers those superior returns on investment that we look for. And we think 50 is kind of perfectly achievable. And in fact, a number of the catchments have already been identified. The rollout, of course, will be cautious at the beginning and kind of accelerate through. But we see a great brand with a national presence that's strong online that can scale up.
And it will have us focus on sort of like decarbonisation and energy efficiency with it, I guess, rather than just putting in your bog standard sort of central heating system.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, I think that demand's coming from everywhere. I think we're seeing that demand, you're right, you know, Miss Central Heating with the installer and the homeowner. We're seeing it from the independent merchant network that APP wholesale supplies. But interestingly, we're also seeing it come across the counter in the merchanting side of the business. So it's a, there's strong demand for, I think, well understood reasons, and I think we are recognised as being well placed in the supply chain to be able to help supply that into the market.
Good. And then sort of, Shankar, complementing all the sort of the organic growth opportunities and the good strong sort of expansion that the group has generated over the last few years, you've got obviously another expertise in your M&A. How should people think about sort of M&A after doing sort of, I think, four or five sort of deals last year, and then you bought the property site, the freehold at round Heathrow just recently as well. How are you viewing all that sort of like for 2023 and 2024?
So again, you know, we don't see any dramatic change in our strategy. We've always said our stall out. You know, we've got an organic growth strategy involving, you know, around our three P's and expanding our current locations, geographies, product ranges, etc. And then on the other hand, we've got a tremendous opportunity in a fragmented market with lots and lots of acquisition possibilities. But we remain selective. So, you know, going into 2023, the acquisitions are always the ones that are selective coming to us. They come to us rather than us actively seeking out and getting ourselves involved in processes. Number two, it's usually a business that we know quite well. And then number three, the pricing range is always within our set disciplined parameters. And so we don't see any change within that, because we also talk about the fact that it's maintainable earnings off of which we will look at an acquisition. We're able to take a 2 to 3 year view on the business. So if we're looking at 2023 being potentially tough, you know, and 2024 stabilizing with 2025, potentially the market picking up again, we can look through a business across that 3 year period, because what we don't do is overpay on the entry, and therefore we're not under pressure. And that allows us to continuously look for strategic opportunities that fit within our criteria. And so we don't see any reason to change that strategy. From a balance sheet perspective, I think we've still got the ability to grow leveraging our balance sheet. We've got a very strong cash flow with a good strong year last year. So, there's nothing at the moment that we envisage would suggest that we would stop acquiring businesses. But we're not going to acquire them for the sake of acquiring. They have to be strategic and within our discipline parameters.
Yeah. Just on that sort of like the resilience of the business, Chris, in terms of sort of like if we do go through it, it's sort of like a tougher recession than even the economists are predicting, rather than sort of like a mild, shallow recession. What sort of levers could the business sort of like pull? I mean, obviously, you've been through numerous recessions in the past. What sort of like things would be an option to look at?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, the businesses, as you say, used to kind of dealing with these circumstances. I think if you look back at the track record, I think number one, as Shank said, we are a tiny part of the market. So if the market dropped by 5, we should be able to cover that because we've got the market share opportunity. But beyond that, then there's really good discipline around overhead, and our working capital levers are kind of well known and kind of tried to test it in their execution. If we need to kind of look at our working capital, we know how and when to pull those levers. And the experience of COVID would be a really good case study. Our leverage drops substantially through that kind of peak disruption in H1 2020.
Good. Okay. And then sort of like putting the all the acquisitions you've currently done, onto the actual business and looking on an annualized basis. I mean, you exited sort of like 2022, or the guidance is for 450 million, which is up sort of like nearly 24%, and with an EBITDA of 28.3 million pounds. If you put all the sort of acquisitions together, what sort of annualized run rate you're currently sort of like trading on?
Yeah, so obviously they all landed in Q1 last year. So the full year effect is about 10 to 15 million. So it takes you up to kind of 460, 465.
Right. Okay. Good. And then if you sort of like looking into that, this year 2023, is that a good sort of benchmark that people should look should feel for this year, or is that sort of like a good feel? I mean, I know you've pushed in for sort of like 2024 at your strategic objective of 500 million and with an increasing EBITDA margin.
Yeah, I mean, I think consensus is out there, and it's kind of slightly ahead of that annualized position. You know, obviously, we'd expect to grow this year as well, organically through those growth levers that we've got. So I think we're kind of, no change to consensus at the moment.
Good. And then Shankar, I guess sort of like optimism for the near sort of like 2-3 years. I mean, you say the business is still very much on track. As you say, you sort of proved today you had a good 2022. There should be no, sort of like just all systems go, really. Keep moving, but look at the wider economic environment.
I think, Paul, the thing to point out is the fact that the business is small, number one, and it's decentralized. So, decentralized businesses in downturns and in periods of uncertainty do really well because, guys and girls who are at the coalface are able to effect change very quickly, and they can react, in real time to what's happening in their local market. So, when you take the business that we've got, which has grown through multiple downturns, starting going all the way back to 2009 when the market was down by 20%, we were up too, albeit a much smaller business. When we look at COVID, most of our peers were on a like-for-like basis down. I think we grew very marginally, but we still grew despite being shut for a number of weeks, etc. You look at 2019, the business grew. Every crisis point, every downturn, our business manages to grow. And like I said, it's because of the focus we have on serving the customer, on investing in our business, on making sure our colleagues are highly motivated, and making sure that we remain decentralized. And that, I think, is something that perhaps, you know, should be sort of talked about a bit more. The fact that a decentralized model, whilst, of course, it has its own perhaps cost factors that somebody looking into the minutiae might turn around and say, well, there's a bit of inefficiency. You're not centralizing. But traders don't like being told from the center what to do, right?
Nobody does. So, you know,
well, absolutely. Well, okay. I was being kind. I'm sure there are many business systems where a centralized structure works very well, but it doesn't here. Multiple brands, multiple geographies, multiple products, right? But the common theme is, you know, great focus on customer service, you know, really strong colleague engagement, investment in our business, and ultimately, you know, credit. Certainly for our 2022 results, go to the senior leaders and the branch managers in our businesses. You know, those are the guys, the regional MDs, the group MDs, the branch managers. Those are the guys who've really delivered 2022 for us. You know, mine and Chris's job is strategy setting and making sure that we guide them along the way when there are bumps in the road, or we point them towards where the opportunities may exist, and effectively we back them. So, you know, well over 50 mini entrepreneurs lurking around every day trying to figure out how they're going to beat the competition, or in fact, you know, how they're going to beat last year.
We've certainly
tried to keep that model simple.
Yeah, you've certainly recruited 50 very good entrepreneurs there, that's for sure. Delivered extra result. Now, Chris, just finally then, in terms of the news flow, you've got the prelims in probably April or sometime?
Yep, correct. Yep, you'll hear from us in April on the full year results.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks very much, gents, and big congrats, I say, on the better-than-expected year-end trading update. And as I say, keep those 50 entrepreneurs well-employed and at the coalface.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.